Me, you really love it. It's time to take a 10-game look at the numbers for your Memphis Grizzlies on this edition of Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for checking out the podcast. Today, we are going to delve into the numbers and take a look at what this Grizzly team looks like through 10 games compared to last year. Who's doing what? How have they replaced Zach and Tony and Vince and the guys that they have lost? How are they making do without a real traditional two guard? What are the rookies, in particular Dylan Brooks? What does he look like thus far? All those things will be answered coming up in the next few minutes. And we'll talk a little bit about the game tomorrow against the game later on tonight against the Portland Trailblazers. So all of that is still to come here on the pod. As always, when you want to get in touch with me and you got a question or a comment, as a lot of you will have and a lot of you do, or if you have any requests for stuff that you want to see numbers-wise down the line, please feel free to let me know on Twitter. I'm at Peter Edmiston, or via email, pedmiston@gmail.com. So we're going to get started here and start looking into some of these numbers for the Grizzlies. All right, kids, let's knock this thing out and talk a little bit about what we've seen so far through the first 10 games of a really interesting Grizzly season thus far. 6-4 are the Grizzlies, and two of those losses have come without Chandler Parsons. Those were the two games, probably not coincidentally, where the Grizzlies played their worst basketball. So, you know, if you look at their full, and I say full, in the sense of their normal rotation, bearing in mind the injuries that they're dealing with, and that really, you know, just throws Parsons into the mix, 6-2 with that group, it remains to be seen how the reinsertion of Jermichael Green and the introduction of Ben McLemore to the mix, along with Wayne Selden, whenever that happens. You know, McLemore and Green, I think, are relatively close. We're talking about, you know, maybe even on Saturday for Jermichael and possibly not long thereafter for Ben McLemore. You know, once those guys get back and Wayne Selden gets back, then, you know, how that affects the rotation, you know, that'll remain to be seen. But for now, you know, bearing in mind that they're dealing with a limited group, it's not a bad start to the season, to be quite honest, particularly when you take into account the wins over the Rockets and the Warriors. They've played really well against the better teams. It's just the back-to-backs in those non-Parsons games where they've played like garbage against bad teams, the Mavericks loss being the particularly stinging one. The Lakers were not far behind, but when the team's only got one win, like the Mavericks, and you happen to be that win, that kind of sucks. That's the record. If you look around the West, too, things are pretty well unfolding exactly the way that we expected them to. Maybe it took a little bit longer for the Timberwolves to kind of get it together, but, you know, after a little bit of a rough start, they've won five straight. They are now second place in the West. The Warriors are right alongside, but presumably, you know, they're going to continue to rise up the rankings and take their place atop the charts. So that leaves, you know, everybody else kind of scrambling around there, and Grizzlies, Blazers, Spurs, Clippers, Jazz, Pelicans, Lakers, Nuggets, Thunder, all within a game and a half of each other. And it goes 11 deep. I think the Lakers, you could probably take out of the equation there. In spite of their 5-5 start, they'll drop off, but the other group is still going to be there, which means the West goes 11 deep, and the only teams that you can pretty well knock out are the Suns, Kings, and Mavericks for sure, and the Lakers probably. That leaves everybody else still fighting, which means that the Grizzlies, with three games to play on this road trip starting tonight against Portland, you're three bad games away from dropping down from fourth to like 11th or 12th in the West extremely quickly. The Thunder right now technically are 12th in the Western Conference. Now, that won't last long, but again, you know, they're really bad. Cleveland over in the East is 13th. I mean, it's been an interesting start to the season. And no, I think over the next 10 games, you'll see teams separate out and you'll see that separation start to occur. And the teams, you know, finding their rightful spot. We are just 10 games in, but 10 games is a big enough sample to start to see what teams do well and what they don't do well. And so that's why I wanted to take this opportunity to kind of look at the Grizzlies through that spectrum and figure out exactly what it is that they're doing right now that's a little bit different or that's particularly good compared to years past. Let's start kind of just overall. The offensive rating for the Grizzlies is 104.1, which is a little bit down from last year, but the offensive rating tends to even out, and I think over the course of the season, particularly when you add, you know, the full rotation in, that number will pop its head up a little bit. The defensive rating is the interesting one, 99.6 thus far. That is well ahead of last year's pace and the year before that, for that matter. They were 105.4 2 years ago, 104.5 the river last year, and then this year it has dropped off dramatically, 5 points per 100 possessions thus far this year, which means the net rating is a plus 4.5 thus far. That number, if it holds up, would be the best one in, well, Grizzly history, actually, going all the way back to, you know, pre-Memphis days, because, I mean, you know, they weren't very good before they came to Memphis. They weren't very good for the first couple of years in Memphis. Even when they made the playoffs, they were not all that spectacular in those years, apart from the one, you know, 50-win season. So the net ratings have not been all that good. When that team that made the Western Conference Finals ended up with a 4.2, in the net rating, so the Grizzlies are edging that number right now at plus 4.5, and that's actually gone down a little bit over the course of the last, three games or so? That's been trimmed down a little bit. That was 5-6 earlier in the year. They are playing at a faster pace than they've ever played, going all the way back, even in that 07-08 campaign when Kyle Lowry and Mike Conley was a rookie, and it was, you know, that they had that Lowry and Conley thing going, and they had young Rudy Gay and just throwing the ball around and running around, losing a million games and not caring, playing really fast, horrible defense. You know, even that team, you know, they're playing faster thus far this year than that team is. The problem is, as we've talked about, it just their pace, and they've risen from last season, but it still is really slow compared to the rest of the league. And, I mean, that's okay. That's not necessarily a problem, per se. It just means that when you look at the Grizzlies and you see their pace comparatively, it doesn't really look like much has changed because, you know, still compared to the rest of the league, they are among the slowest teams out there. They're bottom five in pace. But compared to their own normal standards, and if you look over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years in particular with the core four, they've bumped up the pace quite a bit. They were from the NBA's, there's different ways to measure pace, but I'll just use the NBA's own standard of possessions per 48 minutes. They were just under 95 possessions per 48 minutes last year. They're at 98 this year. Yeah, they haven't been that high ever, as I mentioned, and only once in the last 15 years have they been even at 97, and that was that gear I was referring to earlier on. So they are definitely, by their standards, playing at a breakneck pace. Now, for them, they look around the rest of the league, and there are, you know, so many teams that are over 100, you know, and even, you know, they were sniffing 105 and beyond. Yeah, that is an area where the Grizzlies cannot get. They can't get there. They're not going to get there. But they are in a, you know, in terms of what they're able to do, you're seeing some positivity. You're seeing some movement and some effective pace on top of that. And, you know, particularly bearing in mind that they're playing with a limited group and a roster that is by no means full. they're missing three rotation players. You know, you have to even expect that pace has naturally had to come down a little bit. And you could, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would expect that once you get McLemore back into the mix and you get Seldon and you get Jermichael Green, that you could even see that pace pick up a little bit more because there'll be a little bit more effective depth from the team. Interesting to me that three-point attempts for this team have continued to go up in a big-time way. They went up colossally last year. If you go back to Dave Yeager's last year, they were at 18.5 three-point attempts per game. That number jumped up to 26.5 last year. It's already over 30 this year. So that is about a 20% increase year over year after about a 40% increase the year before that. So 2 years ago, 18.5 three-pointers per game. This year, 30.5 three-pointers per game, a massive increase over that two-year span as they've tried to modernize their game to some extent. And even though the percentage has hovered roughly around the same 34-35% mark for the entire run, because you're taking more, you are scoring more points from the three. And I think that overall, there's been a decent correlation between three-point attempts and wins. You for the Grizzlies, you want to take more, even if you don't necessarily make more. So that's probably a good thing, even if it would still behoove them to find a little more effective shooter here and there. Grizzlies taking more foul shots this year than last few years, which is a good sign. You see them drive to the basket, quite a bit. That certainly helps. That's a reason why their field goal attempts have been down from last year. Not rebounding the ball as effectively, and the offensive rebounds in particular have dropped off a cliff. The Grizzlies have never, ever once had a season where they ended with under 10 offensive rebounds per game. That number right now is 7.6. Far and away the smallest number that they have had. And that's one of those things, the trade-offs of playing small. The Grizzlies have been a team that has consistently played bigger. So naturally, they've been a team that's feasted on those offensive rebounds, but that is changing. And as a result, those numbers are changing. They're pretty shocking when you see a Grizzly team that's sitting there with that few offensive rebounds, and their offensive rebounding percentage is low. It just is not. It's not the same group. It's not the same strategy. It's not the same plan that we've seen from there. And that's the way that it goes. I mean, you have to do something. You give up something if you're going to try to modernize your game. The Grizzlies down to 18.1% of offensive rebounds grabbed. That was 25% in the last three seasons, and 30% the years before that. So it's gone down, kind of stair step down, but it is off of a cliff. It's off of a cliff this year. It's okay. Got to give up something. Free throw rate is up. Also, their defense against opponents has been really good. As I mentioned, they have done a great job defensively, even without Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, all that stuff. You worried about what would happen, where they would be, all that, and thus far hasn't been a problem. Defensively, they are really very solid. Even taking into account the Lakers game, where they did not play especially well for three quarters of that game, they are still a top five defense on Synergy, and right around that same mark from defensive rating and all that. So it's been a formula that is slightly modified, but it still has hallmarks of Grizzlies teams of the past where you have to rely on defense. In the regular season thus far, the offense has come from the following guys, and I'm using here Synergy's numbers to go through all the possessions, the 1,047 possessions that the Grizzlies have had thus far, and look at the proportion of those possessions finished by each of these guys. That's where you get the breakdown. Marc Gasol is the leader, 19.6% of those possessions finished by him. 15.6 for Mike Conley, 14.7% Tyreek Evans, 10.6 for Mario Chalmers, 10% for Dylan Brooks, 7.5% for James Ennis, then Jarrell Martin, 6.4, Andrew Harrison, 5.6, Chandler Parsons, 5%, and Brandon Wright, 4.6%, which means that if you take Jarrell Martin and Andrew Harrison combined, that's 12% of the Grizzlies' possessions overall this year have been finished by one of those guys. And when I say finished in this case, I just mean that the final act has happened from them. That doesn't necessarily mean finished in a good way. It just means that whatever the final thing that's happened, happened because of them. So it could be a turnover, could be, you know, whatever, good or bad. That's when I say finished, that's what I mean by that. So those 12% of those possessions have just been thrown out the window, basically, because Martin and Harrison have not graded out particularly well in terms of their efficiency. Both guys in the lower 20% in the league in terms of points per possession. Marcus Gasol is doing well, as is Mike Conley in terms of points per possession. Tyreek Evans, excellent start to the season at over 1.1 points per possession. That puts him top 15% in the league. James Ennis as well, top 6% in the league at almost 1.2 points per possession. But the real standout has been Chandler Parsons, 1.27 points per possession. That is 98th percentile, one of the very best in the entire NBA. What a story it has been. And he is, when he's not out there, you know, now he is missed. He truly is missed. It's incredible to imagine where things have come, how it has happened. But Parsons is shooting, you know, 51% overall. He is putting his jump shots in at an absolutely staggering rate. He is performing at on an offensive level at a rate you could not possibly have seen coming based on what you saw in preseason and last year, but it is a welcome sight for Grizzly fans. And, you know, he is shooting 54% on jump shots, which still puts him top of the charts in the league, 1.5 points per possession on jump shots, which again is the very best mark in the league. Albeit, again, we're talking about small sample sizes because we're early in the season, but damn it, a number like that deserves to be put out there, small sample size and all. Last year, if you go back and look at those numbers about finishing and who finished those possessions, Zach Randolph finished 13.2% of the possessions last year. Tony Allen was fourth at 8.7%, so that is about 22% of the offense. Then Vince Carter, 6.8, so that's another, that makes it about just under 29% of the offense, you know, from those guys who aren't here anymore. Troy Daniels, 6.4% of those that were finished. So there's another, that's about a third of the Grizzlies offense overall represented by those guys, a little over a third. And you can go back and listen, the replacements for those thus far, almost to the percentage total exactly, have been Tyreek Evans, Mario Chalmers, and Dylan Brooks, those three guys. And it's been a positive trade-off. Last year, you may not have known. And to be quite honest with you, I was a little surprised. But Zach Randolph graded out on a per-possession basis by the folks at Synergy at just under 0.9 points per possession, which put him in the 33rd, which put him in the lower third of the NBA, the bottom third of the league in efficiency. And you just don't, when you see it like that, and you kind of knew last year that Zach wasn't at his best, but he still scored a ton of points and was still, super prolific out there on that second unit. But from an efficiency standpoint, he had waned, and those numbers had diminished. Same thing with Tony Allen, who, you know Tony's story, but not a particularly efficient guy, and he was, 24th percentile in the league. So those two guys combined were, 0.87 or so points per possession between them. Not all that great, and you've seen the Grizzlies get more efficient as a result of replacing those guys. No knock on those guys, but they've gotten more efficient because they've replaced those guys. And it's been generally a positive thing. It hasn't hurt, you know, to lose Tony Allen hasn't really hurt thus far defensively. I think it will hurt more, to be honest with you, in the postseason. If you go back and look at, you know, when Tony Allen was at his absolute peak and when he was at his best, he was so disruptive in playoff series. Teams had to, you had to deal with the guy. You had to deal with that one defender who could disrupt your entire game plan, who could take your best shooter out of the game, who could take your best scorer and frustrate him to no end. That in a playoff series is really, really valuable and is so tough for the other team to prepare for. You just don't have anybody that can really get you ready for his chaotic, bizarre at times, but overly effective style of defense. That had been diminishing, of course, and with it, you know, you take that away. And the Grizzlies have been able to switch a little more effectively and a little more with a little more discipline, which has helped. But I think the jury's still out until you get to the postseason what that loss really means, because I think him in a one-on-one situation and the ability to neutralize some of those guys is so vital in the postseason. We've seen it. We've seen it over and over. And I think playoff basketball is a different animal altogether than regular season basketball, just a different sport, really. That I think you'll still have to kind of wait and see when and if the Grizzlies make the playoffs. You'll have a better feel for how that loss will affect things. In a moment, we'll look a little closer at some of the individual players' numbers and find some intriguing trends that are starting to emerge here on the team. Now we're going to look at the players so far and, you know, kind of a few little interesting tidbits from them. And I should tell you that, you know, when it comes to my evaluation of players or the way that I like to look at things, I look at lineups, certainly. I look at the way they play together. I look at net rating and on-off, stuff like that. You take all that into account. I look at the synergy numbers, the points per possession, allowed and scored and all those things and kind of put them together. I don't look as much into the baseline, just kind of, you know, like strict field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, that kind of stuff, because I think it all kind of it'll show itself in the other numbers, which I think usually are a little bit more telling and a little more reflective of the impact that the player has. You know, not to say that those aren't important and they shouldn't be looked at. They should. It's just that I think that the value that they bring is probably shown more clearly in some of these other numbers in addition to that. So when you strictly look and say, okay, well, this player is shooting 40% or 35% or whatever, that's fine. But I think the offensive rating will give you a lot of that number right there, particularly with the Grizzlies. And you look across the board, and the only guy that's shooting over 40% from, the only guy that's who, when he's on the court, the team is shooting over 40% from three, I should say, is Chandler Parsons. You know, now in terms of player statistics and specifically who's shooting over 40%, Parsons is shooting 50% from three, and Tyreke Evans is shooting 45% from three, and that's it. Everyone else is under the 40% mark, which is why the Grizzlies as a team are shooting 34%. But I find that other number more interesting, because it tells you what the team is doing when that player is on the court, which to me encompasses the value that a guy like Parsons has, not only as a scorer, but part of the reason why he's here is because, okay, he can distribute and he can play make a little bit. That was the whole point of it. That is reflected in that number that you see. I say all that as just kind of a prelude to my discussion about these players and why you don't always hear the strict specific, like, okay, he shouldn't, you know, XYZ. There's more to it to me than that. That said, I'm fascinated by the incredible numbers that we're seeing from Parsons thus far. He's got a net rating of plus 22.7. That is the best of basically any player who plays, you know, rotation minutes in the league. There's nobody that can touch that mark. It is far and away the best in the Grizzlies and the best in the NBA. You know, he's got a 109.5 offensive rating, which, you know, is 5 points better than the team's, and defensive rating of 86.8, which is unbelievably good. Off the charts good. You know, the crime is that he's only played 140 minutes. And that's not David Fizdale's fault or anybody else. That's just the situation that he finds himself in with his body. But he has been ridiculously effective, and he is the leader in both offensive and defensive rating for the Grizzlies. Who would have thought after 10 games, what would I have given you? What odds could I have given you that you would have accepted that bet? Chandler Parsons would be the best offensive and defensive rating Grizzly after 10 games. Well, there wouldn't have been odds high enough. Why would you have wasted your money? You would have thrown your money away. I could have given you 1,000,000 to 1, and you would just be throwing your money away. Well, in this case, no. Not at all. The bench units all look better. Parsons way, way better. But the bench units all look better just by the fact that they're not playing with Jarrell Martin and, in particular, Andrew Harrison. You know, those numbers go up quite a bit as a result of staying away from them, which helps Brandon Wright be plus 15, Mario Chalmers be plus 11.5. Same thing with Dylan Brooks, Tyreek Evans, plus 9. It helps. And is the reason why Mike Conley is only a plus 3. Marc Gasol is basically even in terms of net rating. They are involved in these lineups that have just been horrible. Horrible. And there's no other way to describe it. You know, Jarrell Martin, try though he might, is still, in my mind, not displaying really any NBA skill that you thought you saw. Like, you thought in preseason his ability to get up and down the floor was helpful. His ability potentially to rebound could have been important. His ability to be able to kind of put the ball on the deck to potentially guard on switches, all that stuff. You thought that there was an NBA skill in there. At least I did. I thought that there were, you kind of broke through and at least got over that relatively mild threshold of limited NBA skill. Well, it has not happened to speak of in the regular season. He's had a couple of okay games, but for the most part, he's been overmatched and is getting roasted defensively on a lot of these switches that he ends up having to deal with. And then interior defense, you know, you saw against the Lakers, he was getting, you know, pushed around. He's not strong enough. He's still a tweener, even though tweener's not a bad word anymore in the NBA. He's still a tweener in a bad way. And he's not long for the rotation once Jamichael Green comes back, and he will be a significant upgrade over Jarrell Martin and what he's provided right now. Martin, instantly a minus 6 in terms of net rating, but that's nothing compared with Andrew Harrison, who is a minus 18.6 net rating for a team that is plus 4.5. That is unbelievably bad. His defensive rating is 115.6. And again, the team's defensive rating is 99.6. So his defensive rating, when he's on the court, that's like insane. 16 points worse. Goodness gracious. And his offensive rating is 7 points worse than the Grizzlies as a team. That's why you're minus 18.6. And that's why, you know, he's played more minutes than Chandler Parsons. He's played more minutes than Brandon Wright. He's played 156 minutes this year. You know, and I don't mean to pick on Andrew, because he's a nice guy, and it, you know, I think we've talked about this before. He's limited talent wise. He's just is. So it's not, that's not his fault. He's doing the best he can. You know, it's not meant to be a knock on him in any way, shape, or form, but the Grizzlies have to do better. And they have to find better, and they will, once McLemore and Seldon are back in the mix. And when that happens, it would not surprise me one bit if they just cut Harrison. I think he is, there's just nothing that he can offer at this point. It makes things considerably worse. He was a minus 11 in the Laker game in just 9 minutes, which tells you everything you need to know about his contributions. Yeah, he just is not, he's not, there's just not much there. There's just not much there. He's not defending anymore. He was defending a little bit last year. He's not defending anymore. And when that's the case, because certainly, you know, this offense, he's going to struggle. You know, offensively, he's not going to be able to give you a whole lot. But, you know, he should be, and he had been previously giving you something on defense, but that has completely collapsed this season. If you look last year, for example, his defensive rating was 102.5, which was 2 points better than the Grizzlies' 104.5. This year, that's at 115. Again, for whatever reason, could be him, could be the team, could be the style, whatever it is, it is not working. And he needs to be removed, and he's already been removed from the rotation, from the starting lineup. He needs to be removed probably from the roster altogether. There's probably better use of that position at this point now. Once those guys come back, especially, there's got to be a better use for that position, the way that he's playing right now. But even if that is not the case, at least getting him out of the main rotation will do wonders, and has already done wonders, as you saw from Dylan Brooks, his insertion. And we talked about that yesterday on the podcast, the difference in rating when you replace Andrew Harrison with Dylan Brooks in that starting lineup is pretty astonishing. Speaking of Dylan Brooks and him jumping into the starting lineup, some interesting stuff from Dylan, who's been a real breath of fresh air for the Grizzlies. And interesting to look at the discrepancy from him, because most of the time the shots that he is getting are spot-up shots. That is, 43% of his offense per synergy comes via spot-ups. Spot-up does not necessarily mean spot-up jump shot, although that's part of it. If you take the no-dribble jump shot, you catch it and you shoot, that's spot-up jump shot, that's part of it. But also, when you spot-up, you could get the ball, and then you could drive the basketball from that position, as Dylan Brooks likes to do and is often caught on the walk in those situations. He has turned it over a bit much in that situation. But that being said, it's interesting to find out that his drives to the basket have been so much better in spot-ups than his jump shot. It's a pretty huge discrepancy. Of those spot-up situations, he takes the jump shot 36% of the time and is shooting 19% on those. That is good enough for bottom 10 in the NBA of the 180 or so that are qualified for that position, according to Synergy. Not good. But when he drives the ball to the basket, he is averaging almost three times as many points per possession. He's putting up better numbers than anybody else in the NBA in that situation. And he scores 71.4% of the time. Whereas with the jump shot, it's that number is 19%. A massive difference. And it's rare that you see a discrepancy like that, particularly from a rookie. And it's going to tell you that obviously he's going to face a lot less in terms of closeout intensity as the year goes on. Teams are going to start Tony Allen-ing him. Is that the way you say that? I think that's the way you say that. They're going to start TA-ing him. They're going to say, look, man, make a jump shot. Make it. And I think Brooks, his jump shot looks fine. And I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to, but thus far he hasn't. And that's a pretty wide discrepancy in those numbers for Brooks. You can also see the turnovers that have happened. And he's like any other rookie, like any other young player, you're going to have to modify your game You're going to have to find the things that you can do to alleviate big, huge differences in your game. You have something like that, teams are going to, you know, really take advantage of you because once that book starts getting written about what you are, and everyone knows around the league, there's no secrets around the NBA. So then you have to assess where you go. You have to assess how you modify your game from that point. Once you've been sort of found out, Brooks is still a little young right now and a little new and probably hasn't been fully found out, but it will be coming. He will be, and he's going to have to make that change. That's the first real test of him as a rookie, but he's passed all of his tests so far. We'll see if he continues to do that going forward. One other nifty little tidbit. The Grizzlies are scoring in transition much more frequently now than they were last year. The mark was just over 10% of their possessions were in transition last year. That number's 15%. Doesn't sound like a huge difference, but it really is when you stretch it out over the course of all the possessions, all those games, all that time. You know, that's a big number. It's a big change, actually, and it tells you the commitment to the pace and moving the ball is pretty darn effective overall for the Grizzlies. So a lot of things that you might not expect, a few things that you would expect, including, you know, Marc Gasol being the most gone to guy, the most seen guy, the most used possessions guy for the Grizzlies. That's to be expected, for all the reasons that you understand about how good he is and what he provides. Same thing as Mike Conley, who is, you know, very close in terms of usage and where they are. But it's those other guys that have stepped up, and we'll see if they can continue to do that in the matchup with the Blazers. And the Blazers, of course, coming off that controversial victory over the Thunder on Sunday, where Carmelo got kicked out wrongly, in my mind, for the, you know, quote-unquote flagrant two, where he basically just followed through after his own basket, where he didn't even really commit the offensive foul and ends up hitting one of the Blazers players. And it was an example of where we still have a lot of work to do, even with replay and everything else. The interpretation of the flagrant foul rules can be really frustrating at times. But, you know, that said, big win for the Blazers. They needed it. And, you know, how will the Grizzlies deal with the obvious issues? Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and then, you know, Yusuf Nurkic, who has turned into a heck of a tough cover. You know, what will they do? How will the rotations look? You know, I think the starting lineup will continue to be Dylan Brooks involved, as you would expect, and you have to see the approach get better. You need to see, you know, what happens when Chandler Parsons is back in the mix. That's a huge part of things for this team, as we've discussed. And so, you know, putting all those things together, you know, to continue the road trip, and this sort of is the last part of the first half or so of the road trip, and it's more than half. But I say half because you break it up into two big chunks. It's going to be separated out, this road trip, the first three games and the last two. They'll come back and practice here in Memphis, you know, towards the end of the week. So the Grizzlies, that's really what you're looking for. If you could finish off this road trip, this portion of it, with that win to stand at 2-1 going into the remaining two games of the trip, and an opportunity maybe to add Jermichael Green to the mix, and maybe he and Ben McLemore to the mix to close out this road trip, you know, once that happens. Adding all of that in, you have 2-1 and you've got all that to look forward to, then things could really be moving in the right direction for the Grizzlies. So, you know, we'll see. Fascinating matchup. Looking forward to it. And, of course, we'll talk all about it on Wednesday's pod. Thank you guys so much for listening to the pod and for supporting it. And again, get in touch with me if I can do anything for you. Thank you for all that you do. Looking forward to talking to you again as we continue here on Locked On Grizzlies.